Hello, welcome to podcast number 6, and the story time is increasing, so I will try to make it as brief as I can. So I was just looking over some bit of trivia posted about the 1960s television show Star Trek. There was an episode that aired on November 22nd, 1968, and if any Star Trek fans are listening, you know what that one is. It's just, there was... Somebody wanted to commemorate the date, so I saw that. And, of course, I'm going to go and see what was airing on Dark Shadows that same day. I went between the tape date and the air date for November 22nd, 1968, and then was pretty blown away by what was all going on. Well, I guess you could jump into any of the summaries and just go, oh, all that was going on. Man, you think this story is complicated? There was all kinds of stuff I forgot going on, and only one of them a relief for me. So, I want to share a time when I was working on this, but was getting through it either a flu or cold. I'd been wondering if NBC had Star Trek that made such an impact, and then ABC had Dark Shadows, which also made an impact. They both have their own, you know, convention things going and have for several decades. What the heck was going on with CBS? So, in my nose-blowing, feverish, resting time, I typed in the year and such and found a film strip of what the new fall lineup on CBS was going to be around that time. Hopefully it's still up on archive.org and you can find it, well, if you dare. That fall lineup had some pretty scary stuff. Sure didn't give me the feeling that I was healing from my cold any faster. After seeing a great deal of oddities, I finally got my answers as to what had been going on with CBS that might be compared to the other network's shows of longevity. Hawaii 5-0. Okay. I know that had some well-standing reruns that even I knew it. Makes me wonder, with all these film remakes, are we actually going to get a Hawaii 5-0 film? All right, enough of that silliness. Back to our original Dark Shadows in tandem with the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows. By the way, I didn't name it that to make it sound like the best or something. After a while of looking for a title, after already giving Sir Simon Milligan and manservant Hecubus from the Pit of Ultimate Darkness skits their roles as hosts for this radio drama, I had to slap myself in the forehead for not coming up with the title sooner. Of course. Pit of Ultimate Darkness, Dark Shadows, Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows. That's why in my all due respect list, the kids in the hall come first, and Dark Shadows finalizes the list. So they're sort of sandwiched, everything else is sandwiched in there. And I actually didn't do that on purpose. Like, it didn't really, it wasn't like a plan, it just seemed natural, and as such it is. Now, to the story. And what with Victoria and Peter hanging out at the Bates Motel from episode 5, you can imagine how that turn of events will pan out. Not to the best situation in the world, and we only get a glimpse of it, but to anyone who's seen the old film Psycho, I'm sure Norman is already pretty out of it by the time they get there. Poor Norman Bates. I had a wild fantasy of trying to save him too, but sadly I couldn't. Then there is the mystery between Captain Gregg and Sam Evans, who by this point has glimmerings of being André Dupré. André Dupré is the father of Josette Dupré from 1795. And, of course, both Sam Evans and André Dupré were played by David Ford. I do make hints at other people being reincarnations from that time period, but for now, Sam having been André are where it's at. Also, in order for Sam to have really known about Angelique during his altering of her painting, he must have acquired that knowledge through an afterlife experience. As far as I can recall, André had no clue during his life. This really works because that way Captain Gregg can know him and recognize him, and as we discover here, André was once a ghost who helped Captain Gregg deal with being one himself. Hence the friendship. Then the discussion between Elizabeth and Roger over the Seaview property. This was a house that Victoria really liked. In fact, she loved it. And there was such a to-do about Caleb Collins' last will and testament that she never really got to have it. So you can imagine my dismay when another character stepped in quite a while later, and they pretty much just let him move into the Seaview house that Elizabeth was going to give Victoria from before. Yuck. Also, Roger did me a good turn here in episode 6. He very offhandedly remarks that perhaps David should find Sarah to play with. Early in the original program, David makes friends with the ghost of Barnabas's sister, Sarah, who suffered and died so horribly through the repercussions of Angelique's various curses. Now, in this episode, when I wrote that Roger suggested David go hang out with Sarah again, I didn't realize how much that would really make a difference. David had often gotten very browbeaten over even talking about Sarah, among a lot of other things. I wasn't sure if I wanted to bring her back, but after a while I saw what a big difference it would make. And it was a very, very strange experience for me, and still is. So more about her in another podcast. Starting out our episode here is the culmination of Tony and Carolyn's absconding with Angelique's now withered portrait. Those two kept coming along for me. And the pen Carolyn refers to? I'd love some tales about that one. I actually only know about it from the Dark Shadows Return to Collinwood book that came out in 2012. There is a section about production and this early year's plotline involving some pen that kept switching from person to person, representing something sinister and needing to be solved. And of course, like much on Dark Shadows, just left the audience hanging until another plotline would take over and the rest go forgotten. So I thought I'd just have Carolyn wonder if this was the same pen from however long ago. Who knows what else is down in that root cellar? Now, much of this episode contains a very long scene with our two buddies, Dr. Julia Hoffman and Barnabas, sort of cured, Collins. Like I said, we have finally got the cribbage game. Yay. The way the game turns out is actually based on personal experience. My chap and I were playing cribbage once years ago and watched by two other people. We had to explain that the way that run of cribbage went was extremely unlikely, and also the highest points possible to score during that part of the game. Since then, I still have never seen it happen again in a game of cribbage. So of course I'm going to remember that. It was just amazing that I don't know who won. So I thank our lucky stars for a cool outcome like that. Makes this story more interesting. The betting bit I just juggled out, and I did do the research on Crib and Nod, so this would be a game it was possible for even Barnabas's parents of the 18th century to play. It's also one of the many examples of this project being hard work and not just playing around. As you can hear in the discussion between Julia and Barnabas, it starts with them being rather jovial, working out the problem-solving bit they've often done before. Then, of course, Julia moves the topic to what Dame Barnabas has his eye on and might as well give him a ration of shiz about it. She's gotten so used to that in the original Dark Shadows program, I put this down to force of habit. I mean, he's at least semi-cured. What's he even going to do to Maggie Evans now? Kidnap her again for a cheap thrill? However, Maggie, as Julia Hoffman's patient, was the catalyst of Hoffman picking up on this vampire she wanted to cure, and I guess kind of did in the end. But, so, if that was such a big deal to her, why didn't she find other vampires to cure? That one still escapes me. And I gotta say, I have an odd worry about those fish she left behind at her office. She really seemed to pamper those little guys. If you're wondering why I got her so domineering here, it was more a look at how exposure can just focus a personality into behavioral patterns that aren't exactly healthy. And having spent so much time bickering and getting choked by a vampire who'd been a downright major sleaze, she likely started just getting into the bizarre attitude of turmoil, along with all the other people wiping out on the idiotic dumping ground that is Collinsport. As you can see now that Barnabas has been given a ray of hope that at least he needn't be a disgusting slimeball anymore, he relaxes and finally gets something through to Dr. Hoffman, who is pleased to hear it. He's not such a bad sport after all. As long as he wins the bet, he doesn't care who wins the game. It's just something to do with a friend. For a change. And I like that they discuss all the catching up he has to do with a 200-year gap in tow. There's just something there, so many things in the program where you're like, being used to light bulbs all of a sudden, using the telephone all of a sudden, come on, you know, your suspension of disbelief has problems with that. At least a lot of ours do. I also hope you enjoy Wadsworth's reaction to all of this. He is so worried about Willie Loomis coming back and how much more he has to handle. But what's nice is even Julia Hoffman and Wadsworth are finally getting along. Understandably, after rescuing grumbly Barnabas Collins so many times, as such, it's pretty annoying to have some other guy step in and do it. Oh, no, wait! Wasn't that Dr. Lang? Anyway, yeah, Dr. Hoffman could really get the shaft on that show. So much for women's lib and women doctors. But don't worry, I'll find a way to make her shine and shine good. I wouldn't have given her all those great lines otherwise. In this, I'm not sure Barnabas's voice came out the way I wanted it to. By the end of episode 5, I felt like I'd finally gotten it down, but here it seems a little too rich. Either that, or it's just because I'm having him get irritable with Julia as the evening was so great and then she had to try and boss him around again, like in the bad old days. So, of course, I hope you love the line about trying to out-tyrannize each other. It almost always felt like that's what their favorite pastime was. I do realize there is another continuity flaw here. How could Victoria Winters and Julia Hoffman have the chance to cheek-whip Cassandra when the dream curse had fizzled out so bad and Cassandra got the blade from Freddy Krueger in my episode number 3? Well, maybe it had a slow result before Cassandra went to Boston for her mystic beautician touch-up. Again, the alpha version of this episode 6 was done without tools and from memory only. And frankly, I don't give a darn about flaws here when it comes to the mischief. I care more about the continuity when it comes to the love. And, my dear listeners, shouldn't we all? Enjoy.
The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows, Episode 6. Coffee, Tea, and Cribbage.
Good evening. I am your host, Sir Simon Milligan, and welcome, once again, to the Pit of Ultimate Despair!
Master, what is wrong?
Have I summoned you?
No.
Then be gone! Ow! I am beside myself. My beloved and ultimately evil Angelique has gone down Dorian Gray Road and winded up in Queer Street. Ugh! I am running out of Halloween hankies. I suppose there is nothing for it. Manservant Hecubus?
Yes?
Oh, where are you?
Are you sure you want me, master?
Yes, you benighted buffoon! Materialize!
Here I am.
Well, that was showy of you. Tawdry, and...
Do say it, master.
Evil.
Thank you, master. But why so despairing?
Oh, don't you understand? I'm in love. I am not like other men. Although I am the gatekeeper to the boys' club that is the underworld, I am sensitive to a woman's needs.
What woman would that be, master?
Oh, you know who she is. She goes by many names. Offhandedly, I only know of two. Cassandra and... Angelique. Oh, was there anything I could have done?
Well, master, I suppose reaffirming Tony Peterson's free will didn't help matters.
Hecubus, really? You point out my shortcomings? How? Evil.
Of course, master.
Well, I suppose all we can do is continue. Thusly, Carolyn Stoddard and Tony Peterson. are still on their date. I wish I was. On a date.
And so, there they are at the old root cellar to hide the warped painting of Cassandra Collins. Here, Master, I have an old handkerchief. I hope you don't mind.
Smells like a junkyard dog.
Hellhound, to be exact, Master.
Oh, well, I suppose that sulfurous odor will distract me.
I didn't realize what an eerie feeling I'd have coming back here, Tony.
How long did he make you stay in here?
It was hard to tell. My guess is a few days. Felt like forever.
Looks like there was no shortage of food. Don't you think someone still uses this place?
Not that I know of. And none of this was edible. Higher up is what's left of the house that used to use this root cellar. What are you doing?
I think we should cover this painting up. Someone could wander in and simply see it. Why make it easy to spot?
Let me give you a hand. Ugh! Nasty old rotten boards.
Broken jam jars. What is that?
Looks like a molded rug. Ugh. Smells like it, too.
Perfect. That's just the thing to cover it up with.
How can you touch that horrible thing?
I've touched worse.
Thanks.
No, not you.
I think all the rest of the garbage can go back on top. Oh, hey. I wonder if this is that pen we were looking for years ago.
No.
Anyway, that looks good. I'm ready to leave and clean up.
Good idea. I think my flashlight battery is running down as it is. After you, my dear.
Thank you, sir. Let's get that big stone over it as well.
Wow. I'll need some help with this, too. Carolyn, did you ever see that short film? What to Do on a Date?
I'm not sure. Oh, good heavens! This is heavy. No wonder I could never open that door. You were saying?
It was an educational film. I saw it in high school. The ideas were along the lines of weenie roasts and rummage sales, baseball games, that kind of thing.
Oh, yes. And hiking or something. Bicycle groups. Why do you mention it?
Well, I have a feeling. This type of an evening was not on that list.
And so the pair drove off to Peterson's office, where they clean up a bit, so as Carolyn needn't explain her disarray, and she is taken home to sleep off all that work. Meanwhile, at the Evans cottage, Sam Evans, and or the ghost of André Dupré, and Captain Daniel Gregg, are decompressing from their experience via the withered Cassandra and or Angelique, as the former works on cleaning the painting and touching it up.
Now, let me put together a bit of this solution, and a bit of that, a little rag, and... André? Oui? André?
How is it that you have been able to return to the flesh? I specifically remember knowing you as a ghost. I can definitely find plenty of resemblance between you and this man. But I met you shortly after I had perished.
Je.
And don't tell me in Francais.
Daniel Gregg. You do beat all. You're still lumbering about the mesosphere with no knowledge of the infinite resources of the human soul.
You know the answer to that, Andre. You're the one who told me.
Yes, and even beyond death, bureaucracy still permeates. It was that business of an accidental suicide. They can never get over with you, Daniel Gregg.
Yes, and I'm sure they're still looking me over to decide whether I meant it or not. It's gotten to be so long, I'm not even sure I didn't mean to do it. I confess, that is the trouble with the blasted overanalysis of it.
And you still remain, well, in Maine.
Yes, Andre, but it doesn't explain why you are still in Maine. I can't believe that having my painting scourged would lead to meeting an old friend. And in the flesh! Is it some particle, some spark of an Andre Dupre, lingering in this Sam Evans?
Very curious.
Daniel, do you ever ask yourself how you can do something?
We've had this conversation before.
Oui. But not over a fine glass of Madeira.
Now you're talking.
We have a bottle or two right over here, if memory serves.
You have his memories?
Daniel, we are the same person. That's what I've been trying to explain to you. Here. And what shall we toast to?
Sense, if you can make any of all this.
Very well. To sense. Now, see here, Daniel. You're stuck. That is plain as bloody plain. I myself am but a little stuck. Not like you. Have you never even glimpsed at your other lives?
Other lives?
Oui. Don't you remember the spirits and the soul? The many and the one?
Blast it, Andre! I can hardly see the bale for the hay.
Wait a minute.
Many spirits, but only one soul.
Or vice versa. It depends on how one wants to gestate it. Like I asked. Have you never wondered how to do a thing? Even just materialization?
Not in a long time, Andre.
If it's the microcosm or the macrocosm that feeds your existence in this blighted painter, I don't know. I wanted you to tell me.
Ah, but that's just it. It is a nature I cannot explain. I may have never been proficient with a paintbrush in my days as a Dupre, but you see me with this? A little dab here and there. Somehow I know it now. Daniel, have you never drawn a door and knocked three times?
Andre Dupre, you must be mad.
More Madeira?
Please.
Do you know this town? Collinsport? Many of the citizens really know quite little about the afterlife and rebirth shenanigans going on here. Many of us have been wandering through it repeatedly, and this time around, the daughter I cared so much for and I have come back, as well as so many others from so long ago, all in the exact same spot. It's the order of this day and age. Can you imagine a countess and a hired man reaching out to each other so many incarnations later? It's been over a century, but thanks to a greedy jewel fiend, we may all be able to meet again. All went wrong, my young friend, almost 200 years ago, when this colonial enterprise was being built as a nation.
What happened?
A witch happened, and her spiral of sourness still reeks upon these shores.
Ha! I've met plenty of witches in my time. They're harmless enough.
Oh, Daniel, not one with a chip on her shoulder the size of Seward's Folly. Really, what witches can you possibly know in this day and age?
If there isn't a fine one not a state's distance away from here, right near Manhattan.
Oh, well, if she is any match for the withered husk who came in here, you ought to invite her.
Oh?
That dame who came in asking for the painting? She might have been easy enough for me. Though even withered, witches can be as tough as nails. I didn't mean her exterior. I meant her withered husk of a heart. Let me explain what happened. And since this will take more hours than possible, we lead on to the next day. And to be more precise, the following afternoon.
Mrs. Stoddard, would you like this tray in the drawing room, study, or library?
Aunt Elizabeth, have you seen my father?
Just a moment, David. Mrs. Johnson, I think the study will work. Mr. Collins should be there. Now, hold on a second, my young nephew. Your father and I need to discuss some legal matters.
Oh, all right. Well, Aunt Elizabeth, maybe you can help me.
If it's quick.
Well, it's just that, you know, how I wasn't supposed to go and play at the old house anymore.
Oh, yes. I hope you haven't transferred to playing in the cemetery. David, don't look at me like that. It wasn't a suggestion.
I know. Just a bad flashback for me once when I did.
Well, there you are. So, what about the old house?
Well, Cousin Barnabas, I mean, the way it feels over there.
The tone?
That's it. The tone of the house is more, I don't know, easygoing than it was. I mean, ever since that new butler arrived.
Who? Wadsworth? I think he's more a valet, as he's Cousin Barnabas's personal servant.
Whichever. But I just wanted to know if the rule could be changed. Maybe if I go and ask Wadsworth.
Liz, what is taking so long?
Oh, hello, David.
Father, can I go and visit at the old house?
Well, why not? But David, why not go and find Sarah to play with?
Sarah? Well, it's been a very long time, but I thought...
Indeed, David. I think your father has just shocked the both of us. How can you suggest that, Roger? You always prove certain that was a fantasy.
Oh, it might be, Liz. But where's the harm?
Why must we all worry so much? It's rifling to the blood pressure and puts us all into a tizzy.
This house has been full enough of dark shadows. Can't we have some light shadows for a change?
Or at least some translucent beclouding?
Gee, thanks. Does that mean I can go?
Out you go, young man, and find some company worthwhile. Whether it's Sarah or Wadsworth, just stay out of mischief and be back by supper time.
Well, brother, you're full of surprises today, especially with a missing wife.
Wife?
Oh, yes. I must confess she's plagued me little as of recently. Such a fly-by-night. I'm considering annulment.
Well, this is news. Have you looked over the necessary papers for that?
I have indeed. She comes and goes with such rapidity, I don't think she feels much responsibility to this marriage at all.
The coffee is laid out in the study, Mrs. Stoddard.
Thank you, Mrs. Johnson. Well, Roger?
Now let's pour this out and have a seat. What is this legal matter you wanted to address?
Well, here is the deed and the keys. I'm wondering why it's marked not for sale, but that's the purpose I had in bringing this to you. I wanted your help in solving the mystery.
Oh?
The old Seaview property? Why, that property has been vacant for ages, and likely run down altogether. What did you want to do? Rent it out to some surf-fatting hipsters?
Surfing? I should think not. Those rocky shores of ours would be too treacherous, and then we'd have a scandal on our hands.
Then we'd have a scandal on our hands? This estate is built on scandal, Liz. Where have you been?
All right. Then we'd have even more scandal on our hands. Either way, that wasn't what I meant in reviewing the deed with you.
Well, it won't be long until the Seaview property's salability is within reach. Who did you want to sell it to? Burke Devlin is out of the question.
That's obvious. However, I know that Vicky wanted it, and I wouldn't be surprised if she still wanted it. I'd wanted to give it to her as a wedding present when she was about to marry Burke. But now...
Now she is married to a completely different blighter.
Roger.
Oh, Liz, I don't mean that. I'm just relaxing. And this is good coffee.
Hardly your beverage of choice. Didn't Mrs. Johnson spike it?
No. I did.
Well, no wonder then. Did you only spike your cup, or have you left any for me?
Here. There's some brandy for the whole pot, and no scrimping. Now.
Caleb Collins.
He was the hermit, wasn't he? I think I remember Father referring to him as Kooky Caleb.
Kooky Uncle Caleb, if I remember rightly.
Yes, but the alliteration is better the other way.
Boy, did that man keep to himself. And I don't blame him. Anyway, it looks like it's an open book. You could go over it with that Peterson fellow.
Really? Really? I thought you despised him.
Pshaw! Who has time for that? You know we have overdone it with suspicion and aghast in this household. Look at all we have to be thankful for.
Our home is lovely, the estate is beautiful. We've got our health. Knock on wood.
And here is Caleb's house up for...
Liz, what did you want it for?
I wanted it for Vicky. She loved that house, and I believe she still does.
That's as maybe.
But she and that Clark fellow have flown the coop, likely not to return. And besides, until it's free and clear, Kooky Caleb states it can't be sold before that time except to someone in the Collins family.
Well, don't you feel that Vicky is family?
Yes, but not a Collins.
Biologically speaking, at any rate.
That's what I mean.
What do you mean?
Perhaps she is, biologically speaking, a Collins.
Meanwhile, at the old house. Hoffman.
So I suppose that dream curse could have led to more people. But its terror seemed to cease somewhere between Mrs. Johnson and Professor Stokes. After that, it just became a cacophony of flippant nuances from the old dream curse. And then...
Then? What were the dreams after that? I can tell you, my little nap didn't amount to anything definable. Mostly a man shaking me that he'd gone through so much trouble raiding old coffins to find a wardrobe that fit me.
Oh, yes. What was Victoria's story?
She said she didn't understand it.
Typical.
But what can you remember?
Well, I remember it involved a game of billiards with all 8 balls. From her description, they played it more like snooker. I remember a bit of that. But my dream showed each ball I was about to hit with a triangle on top, displaying a yes or no style answer to a question.
Do you remember any of the questions or answers?
Well, I remember asking if this was the dream curse. It answered, "Reply hazy." Then, on my next turn, I asked if we were done with these confounded dreams. It answered, "Most likely." By the way, I scored 6 points after that.
My goodness. Now I feel a bit bad for what I did after Victoria spoke to you about it.
Why? What did you do?
Well, Vicky was pretty upset. I was consoling her near the fireplace. Then Cassandra wandered in and asked, doe-eyed as ever, why she was crying.
Honestly,
My goodness. That woman never gives up. What happened?
I slapped her.
Did you? I'll bet she warned you'd be sorry for that.
She did. Then Vicky slapped her on the other cheek.
Oh, no. Dare I ask what happened then?
Well, Vicky said she deserved more than a slap in the face. That really tickles you, doesn't it?
Oh, Julia, I dare say that anecdote almost makes everything I've gone through worthwhile. This is second to Sarah smiling at me with a lemon wedge in her mouth. So, did the dreams after that have any validity?
No. Well, from what I could make out, they seemed to inhabit storylines from Milton the Monster cartoons.
Milton the Monster? You have me at a disadvantage.
It's one of those animated presentations on the...
Animated?
After Dr. Hoffman explains the new meaning of animation.
So, the story was...
Ugh. I am so tired. I don't even know if I want to explain the storylines after all of that. The hilarious repercussions previously have just overwhelmed me.
Makes me feel bad about coming over here to bother him. Barnabas, haven't you been updating yourself?
170-odd years is a lot of ground to cover. I have been working on it, Doctor. Especially since things have become a bit slower here. I finally have time. I'm still working on all the rushing about in this day and age.
Oh, well, we all complain of that.
Yes, but you do remember, Doctor. I didn't live in a time like that.
Well, you know you're right. We've been saying it so long. I know in the last century or two it's gotten worse. But what makes you think that people weren't in more of a hurry than in your parents' time?
Something you call the Industrial Revolution. Quickly, the competition was too much. And humans were working alongside mindless machines. All that mattered was speed.
Oh, well, you have been updating yourself. That explanation is a bit simplified, but I suppose somewhat accurate. I can't say I often feel that way when I'm here. It all seems to stretch and slow down, even at the most suspenseful of moments. You know, I've said it before, and I'll say it again. It is rather dreary standing around here without us occupying ourselves.
And as I've answered before, what do you suggest, Doctor? That we play cards? Or cribbage?
You know what? Why not? Let's play cribbage.
Are you serious?
Yes, I'm serious. Let's play cribbage.
I took the liberty of presuming the two of you would like a bit of tea and...
Well, look at that. A cribbage board and a pack of cards. Spying on us, were you?
Madam, the insulation of these walls is something I am still in the process of constructing.
I have few secrets from this one.
Don't be silly. You have few secrets from anyone.
Would sir be desirous that I set this up by the fireplace? It is a chilly afternoon.
Tea and cribbage by the fire. Wonderful, my good man.
One does try, sir. Sir, I was wondering if you'd like me to begin ordering dripless candles for our sunny little abode.
Oh,
have a problem with the lack of electricity? Oh, no, of course not, sir. In fact, it's better that there isn't any. Why is that? Well, I am known for switching off the electricity to prove my point in certain explanations. It's just as well I don't have that temptation now.
Fine.
Order the dripless candles.
Very good, sir.
I'll take the liberty of dealing. Do you know all the rules?
I know I don't want to play with muggins.
Who? Oh, yes. No stealing points. Very well.
Here's my two to your crib. And cream and sugar?
Just cream. 10.
20. 2 points for a pair.
And thusly, whether one knows this game or one doesn't, the entire array of details to this particular game of cribbage is irrelevant enough to skip ahead. Suffice to say that our beloved Redhead has reached 57 points, whilst our beloved Whitefang has reached 48 points, and thusly...
More tea, Doctor.
Yes, thank you. You know, I've been wanting to let you know how pleased I was in your behavior to Vicky getting married.
Ah, yes. I thought you'd bring that up sooner or later. You see, Doctor, I had some first-hand experience at her and Peter's awkward beginnings.
Oh? I'd been hoping it was because you'd finally listened to my warnings.
Oh, dear. Too much fog has lifted since those gloomier days. Why do you bring it up? No, don't deal yet.
You've been going back to the coffee shop to see Maggie. I remember that you used to. And we saw what came of that. Together. So now, again? Why?
Really, Julia? Such a quaint evening, and...
And she's made that sinister background music show up again, inviting murk and mischief. Really, Barnabas? Again? What else would I be wanting to ask you about? I want you to stop seeing Maggie Evans.
Or what?
Well...
My dear, I am fit as the proverbial fiddle. Adam is also well off and moved on, as is Victoria. I hope. You aren't cold enough to want to bring Cassandra back. Except maybe for the pleasure of slapping her again.
Say! Well, no.
Good to see you enjoyed that so much. It was at least a tempting daydream. That shows you to be a good friend. However, if your ploy is to threaten me with the idea of your disclosing the kidnapping of Maggie Evans, there is always your involvement with Dr. Woodard's death I could dredge up again. And frankly, I'd rather not.
I agree. I'd hate to see any other colleagues of mine get terminated by this place. Mind you, I could just take my medallion over to Maggie and uncover the history of her kidnapping to her alone, you know. She'd never want anything to do with you again, I'm sure.
I know you can do that, Dr. Hoffman.
But...
I'd like to believe we finally squared enough away that neither of us is that cruel anymore.
Really? Well, that is a surprise, and unusually kind. Still, I'm sure it isn't a good idea for you to meet with her, and I'd rather you stopped. It's risky.
Oh? You should know that Miss Evans may be getting hired to work at Cullenwood as David's governess, as things are. You might just as well ask me to move away.
Fine. But why not wait? Seeking her out in town seems to be pushing it.
Because, as she has told me herself, I'm her friend. Besides, Doctor, I think the only leverage you have is our poor Willie Loomis.
And I doubt you'd truly want any harm to befall him.
Oh, how are you so sure? Perhaps I won't let him step a foot out of Wyndcliffe. Ever.
Doctor, who would that benefit?
Well, it wouldn't benefit you, and it's all I've got at the moment.
You know, it's a house rule that before anyone meets the 60th point in cribbage, a wager is allowed.
Oh, really? Can I check the family history on that one?
Yes, page 62 under the subheading Crib and Nod.
I see. Looks like Joshua Collins introduced the rule in 1783.
What is so amusing?
He introduced it during a game with your mother, who thought the drinking hour should be earlier than 4 o'clock. That was the first bet with this house rule.
Are you casting a slur upon my mother, Dr. Hoffman?
No, I'm just enchanted.
Why?
Because Joshua came up with the wager rule, and Naomi won the wager. All right, Barnabas, what'll you bet?
You have the deal. I make the wager. During the run, or as it is now called, the play, or the go, whomever gets the highest points in that segment wins the wager. If I win, you will release Willie Loomis from Wyndcliffe at my command. If you win, I will only visit Maggie at the coffee shop on Tuesday nights.
Oh, that's hardly a bargain. You need to stay away from there entirely.
Fine. Entirely. That will be easy, considering I wanted to have a few more paintings done by her father.
Sir?
Yes, hello, yes?
Would you like a third-party witness to the...
Good idea. Come right in. I say, did you... How did you come to...
If sir will forgive me, I wouldn't miss this for all the tea in China. Is Madame concurrent?
Well, I suppose so. So the bet is for the go. Wouldn't want to raise it to the counting of hands.
While you've got the crib? Not bloody likely. A deal.
Will sir and madam please announce the stakes for benefit of accuracy?
Yes. If I win the go, she will release Willie Loomis from Wyndcliffe Sanitarium at my command. Good heavens! If she wins the go, I promise to stop visiting Maggie Evans at the coffee shop.
Oh, my. It all gets worse. I shall dearly pull for a draw.
I put down a 3.
I put down 7, which makes 10.
7. 2 for a pair. That makes 17.
7. Pair Royale for 6. Top that.
7.
That's a double pair royale. And the go of 31. That's a total of...
16 points for Sir, 6 points for Madam.
Your move.
4.
3. 7 in all.
10. 17 in all.
Go.
You had that other 3.
Yes, and I wasn't about to play it. So Sir wins the bet with 16 points contrary to Madam 7. Is this correct?
Yes. You are quite accurate, Wadsworth.
Should I make up Mr. Loomis's room?
No, Wadsworth. I think he has a bit more time.
Oh? Really?
At my command, Doctor. That doesn't mean immediately. As of right now, I believe you have a game to win.
Me?
Yes. I believe you are going to win this game, which is of lesser concern than the wager. If Sir or Madam has no more need of me, I believe I shall make ready to shine Miss Dupre's music box. Do. And now, Doctor, perhaps we can continue our quiet evening without further need to out-tyrannize each other.
You have the music box here, Barnabas? I thought you gave it to Victoria.
I had. But when she was leaving with Peter Bradford, she stopped in to return it. I must say it was rather moving.
I remember seeing them leave from here, but I didn't know she gave back the music box. What did she say?
She said after all that's happened it didn't belong to her, and likely never did. But she was glad to have it while she did. Pair for 2. And with the ace as the starter, another 15 for 4.
Pair for 2. 15 for 4 and 15 for 6.
Barnabas, you weren't upset about Vicky getting married to Peter. It wasn't like that when she was about to marry Burke.
I remember. It was appalling to me that she was going to marry Burke, who I found crass and vulgar much of the time. But I recall what grew between Victoria and Peter Bradford, and though I never had a wild fondness for Mr. Bradford, particularly in his Jeff Clark days, he had something far more enduring than Mr. Devlin. Your crib, Doctor.
Oh. Pair of kings for 2.
What does Mr. Bradford have that's so enduring?
Honorability. Courage. He put himself on the line for her. Anyway, I'm grateful she returned the music box. And I agreed with her that she was probably right. It didn't belong to her. That must be Wadsworth cleaning it.
Eerie timing. I wonder what they're up to now, or where they are.
Ah, living happily ever after, no doubt.
Hmm, are they? Let's look to Victoria and Peter, back on the other coast to find out. Vicky! Get in the car!
But it isn't a woman. It's a man in drag, and I think...
Victoria! Just get in!
It's okay. He's moving away. He's moving back to the house.
We're getting out of here!
Let yourself calm down. He's halfway up those steps now. Peter, lay off the pedal. This is a Dart, not a Rolls Royce.
She'll take the heat.
Slow down. We're off the grounds.
Would it be worth it for me to ask if you packed your toothbrush? Yes, it would. I am sorry, Vicky. I know that was very sudden.
Very? And I never got to find out if that Sam Loomis was any relation to Willie or not.
We'll live with it.
I suppose so. Where are we going now?
First, we have to stop and get gas. Then I've got this letter.
They mentioned an empty room for rent.
Cemetery Lane.
Peter. Really? It's all right. Keep reading.
Westminster, California. We are responding to your entreaty. We have an enchanting room for rent at... cutthroat prices?
Your blood may be as fine as... ours?
Peter?
It's fine.
What? We just had a man in drag come at us with a knife.
Look at the names. This will be perfectly fine.
Morticia and Gomez Adams. You know you're losing some credibility here, sweetheart.
What's wrong? Adams. Perfectly respectable.
All right.
Can't beat the places we've been so far, can it?
Nope. Anywhere is normal compared to Collinsport.
All due respect to The Kids in the Hall, Clue, 1980s film, Psycho, 1960s film, Milton the Monster Cartoons, 1960s TV show, Coronet Instructional Films, The Addams Family, 1960s TV show, The Ghost and Mrs. Muir, 1960s TV show, and of course, Dark Shadows, 1960s TV show. And no, Victoria Winters did not slap Cassandra on the other cheek in the original series, but she ought to have done. And the possibility of playing cribbage was once mentioned in the show, and I had to make that happen.